¿Quieres pedo, güey? No, chale. Chale,
chale, chale. ¿Quieres pedo? No, chale. Chale. Ya sabes que a mí me vale.
Me vale.
¿Quieres pedo? No, chale.
Chale.
You know that I'm down for the
Welcome to Suplexes and Cervezas with Chavo Guerrero Jr. I'm your host, Chavo Guerrero Jr.
Welcome to Suplexes and Cervezas with Chavo Guerrero Jr. That's me, Chavo Guerrero Jr., and thanks for joining in today. Today I'm pleased to bring to you this guest who is actually a very good friend of mine and a guy that I respect and who's done a lot in pro wrestling, Sean Waltman, a.k.a. X-Pac. A.K.A. 123 Kid, A.K.A. 6. You could keep going on and on, but this guy's been around and has done a lot and been part of two of the biggest factions ever in wrestling, NWO and DX. And he's just getting put into the Hall of Fame again. Congratulations for his NWO run to match his DX run. So congrats to my boy, Sean Waltman. And this is a really fun listen because we talk about so much, you know, talk about what it's like to grow up kind of being wrestling fans, you know, me being in the business, but him just being a fan and actually being at the same arenas at the same time when we were probably both 14, 15 years old and not knowing it. Also being smaller guys in the wrestling business and what that takes to work with these huge monsters that that are pro wrestlers. Also, we talk about our first match ever. Remembering some fun times on Nitro and all the good times in WCW and just had a really good time catching up and talking all things wrestling. This guy's a wealth of knowledge. He's been around. He's wrestled everybody. He says a lot, you know, because he's been inducted again to the WWE Hall of Fame. So I hope you all enjoy this. It's kind of like a part two because Sean just released his own podcast called Pro Wrestling for Life, and he interviewed me as a part one, and we thought, hey, wouldn't it be really cool to just piggyback right off of your podcast and continue with this conversation? So that's kind of what we did. So if you haven't listened to it yet, go back and listen to his podcast, which is Pro Wrestling for Life with me, Chavo Guerrero, and then you can listen to this one also. So here you go, my interview with Sean Waltman. I hope you enjoy. And please subscribe and hit that like button. So here you go, Sean Waltman. All right. Hey, Sean, thanks for being here, man. We got X-Pac here with us today. X-Pac, 6-Pac, 123 Kid,
yeah.
And big Sean Waltman. How's it going, brother?
Good, man. Hey, thank you for doing my show the other day.
Yeah, man.
I really enjoyed that conversation, man.
This is part two. We did Sean's Pro Wrestling for Life podcast. That's kind of part one. So if you guys haven't heard that, listen to that first and then come here and listen to this because it's kind of piggybacking right off of each other.
Yeah.
That was fun, bro. That was fun talking.
Yeah. Hey, so last time, like right as we were hanging up from each other, it might have been off air or whatever, but yeah. I don't know if it was, but we were talking about the last time I saw you at the Bruce Pritchard show. Remember, I was all upset. I had Lula with me and that and that carrier thing and on my chest, and they weren't going to let her in, and I wasn't going to. Oh my God, I was so. I was new to having her, and I was really defensive over like, you know, people not wanting dogs to come in.
I'm like, hey, bro, what's up? And you're like, all totally pissed. I'm like, it's me, Chavo. And you're like, yeah, I know. And I was like, yeah, don't worry about it. It's all good.
Yeah.
We figured it out and it worked out. It worked out great. It worked out good. But, man, dude, thanks for being on here. Where are you living right now?
I'm out here in LA.
You're in LA. Oh, great.
So yeah.
I'm an hour south of you. Yeah.
Oh man.
I've been out there the whole time. Together. I never left.
Yeah. We're gonna have to get together.
Yeah, for sure. So you're in LA.
So I live out here in Eagle Rock, it's called. And it's just really right before Pasadena. Like, I'm like 2 minutes from the Rose Bowl.
Oh,
I love
nice.
It, man.
Yeah.
Good it's paradise out here, Chavo.
Bro, and I'm a little south. I'm like Laguna Beach area, so I'm like in the bubble, the Orange County bubble, man.
Sure.
So it's pretty nice.
Yeah, but even Orange County, like you're an hour. Like the other week, we went half an hour, and we were up in the snow-covered mountains.
That's right.
Other half hour that way, we were at the beach.
That's right. That's right.
And when you beautiful beach weather.
Yeah, totally. So that's weird. That's what. That's why we live in California. That's why California is so expensive, and everybody wants to live here. It's because have a little of everything, you know. So it's pretty awesome, man. But let's get into it, man. So, dude, now I've been a fan of yours for a long time before I started, and I know that we're very close in the same age. So I know you started really young.
Yeah.
How old were you when you started wrestling?
Chavo, I was 15, but
wow.
Yeah, like I didn't really start having matches until I was, you know, into my 16th birthday.
Which is still very, very young, especially a 16-year-old wrestling with men. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's young.
And so I was trained by Dean Malenko and his father, but really? but Dean a lot too. Wow. And lesser Joe, his brother Joe, but still Joe.
Wow, as well. So Boris trained you, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, it was amazing.
I think I remember that now at first, but I kind of forgot about that. But that wow, that's something that's
I'm legendary. Really proud of that. Yeah, you know, he was an amazing teacher, man. He could work miracles. Like people you would think by looking at him, they just don't have any aptitude whatsoever.
Right. He could work miracles, man. So many people came out of that Malenko wrestling camp.
Yeah.
I mean, so many high top wrestlers, that legends that came out of there. Really, really, really great.
And my favorite partner, like people like DX, but like the coolest partner I had, and I just really enjoyed it and like the creativity and like the storyline, all that was with Kane, and he's a Malenko guy too. He came in after me.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know. God, yeah. But like Norman Smiley. I mean, you could name over Gangrel. There's so many people that went through that Malenko Wrestling Academy, man. That's awesome. I remember my grandfather talking about Boris Malenko and vice versa. That's pretty
cool. Yeah. Malenko used to talk about your grandfather too.
Really?
Because he made it out to that area, you know, like Amarillo and all that area out there, El Paso.
That's right. Yeah, man, that's right. That's right. What was your first territory that you worked in?
I moved out of Florida. I came up to Minnesota, and it wasn't really a territory because, like, okay, AWA Vern was still running.
Oh yeah.
But
wow, okay.
But Eddie Sharkey would run shows that would outdraw Vern shows, I was on the Eddie Sharkey crew of guys.
Yeah, really. You know? As a 16, 17 year old.
Yeah, 17. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I actually started working in a strip club when I was still 17 with Jerry Lynn.
Right.
Yeah.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
That's another podcast right there.
Yeah.
Wow, man. That's crazy.
So yeah. We were similar to like you teaching the glow girls.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
We were teaching girls boxing and like they would have like these worked boxing matches.
Yeah.
And we would like help them with it and protect them from the drunk guys. And anyway, so like. Yeah, kind of reminded me.
You started in martial arts, right?
Yeah, I had that like
a background
in
martial arts.
Yeah, right? I started in Taekwondo, and just whatever like I could learn after that. Mm-hmm. And to me that's the reason I was able to go in there and run with the big dogs. Yeah. You know, that was my formula. I used that. Very effectively.
Yeah, but when you look at your wrestling style, you never left that, and it always stayed there. I remember very vividly the kicks in the corner and watch the spin kick.
Yeah, the two, I would tell, like, the one when they're coming off the ropes and I hit with the high one, I would tell them, like, put your hand up. Is that, I'll aim for your hand instead of your...
Yeah. Yeah. But you always, you know, you never potatoed me. You always, it was there, but it was never like you felt it, but it wasn't I wasn't going like, oh my God.
The other day I saw the ones I hit you with, like those were nice. They weren't too bad. They were snug.
Snug. Yeah, I like snug. I've always liked snug. I'd rather have hit me and make it look good than miss me and make it look bad.
Hey Chavo. Do you think that like there's something to like us being smaller guys and liking the punishment? Like, I don't know. Like, I wanted to prove to everyone, like I could handle this, you know?
Yeah. You know, you had to be being a smaller guy in this business of giants. And especially when you came up, they were giants. There was no cruiserweights. That wasn't really around. That wasn't a thing that if you didn't like getting punished, then you didn't make it in this business.
Yeah. There was something about it. And a part of it was just the reaction you got when somebody took your head off with a clothesline or a big boot, like, and you took it really well, and it got that pop. Man, I was addicted to the pop.
Yeah, well, you took them so well. You took a great ass kicking, you know.
Yeah, well, oftentimes I got knocked out. Like,
right.
There was sometimes I would work a program with a guy, and I'm not going to name names because it wasn't their fault. It was my fault. Mm-hmm. But I would get knocked out every night, and I knew it was coming.
Wow. That's crazy. And just to know what we know about concussions and stuff now, it's like so crazy. Like now we'd be like, okay, we can't do that anymore. But then it was like, come on, put me in, hit me hard.
Yeah. Chair shot. Oh yeah. I'm not putting my hands up.
I know.
Yeah. You know, oh my God.
I know. What were we thinking? How did you make it to the WWF at the time?
It's weird. Cause I never, like in my mind, I never really envision my, and you know, visualizing is a big part of like being successful in life.
Absolutely.
Right. And I visualized I would be successful in wrestling. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't like in my mind, WWF wasn't in the equation just because Land of the Giants. Right.
Right. Right.
And I consider myself a pure wrestler, like trained by Malenko. Like I was sort of a purist, to be honest with you. And, absolutely. You know, I wanted the regular gear. Like I didn't like people that, not that I didn't like them, but I thought like most guys should wear wrestling gear.
Absolutely.
You know, look professional.
Wrestling boots, wrestling tights.
Yeah. So I had a tryout in WCW. Mm-hmm. Cause this guy named Kip Fry came in. They hired this guy named Kip Fry.
Kip Fry.
He lasted about a cup of coffee before they brought Bill Watson. During that cup of coffee, he brought me in for a tryout. Mm-hmm. I worked with this guy named Bob Cook, who's a Malenko guy.
Yeah, Bob Cook.
It was great. It threw one of the best punches you ever see. But like, I loved working with Bob, and he gave me a great tryout match. Mm. It was great, and we got reactions, and I did all my shit. Mm-hmm. Like, because Magnum TA said, just go in and do all your shit so we could see what you do. So like, there wasn't a lot of rhyme or reason. There was no like great psychology in the match, but I got my shit in, and Bob made me look great. And I thought I was going to get hired. And then Bill Watts came in.
And then
it wasn't his idea.
Well, Bill was always a big guy thing. It's funny because Bill was really good friends with my dad and really liked my dad, which was, it was not normal Bill Watts. I think he liked my dad because my dad would tell him to F off all the time.
Well, was guys that he liked, like he loved the Rock and Roll Express. He loved your dad.
Yep.
And Hector.
Yeah.
And he really liked me when he came to WWF.
Right.
It's just, I wasn't his idea. I was Kip Fry's idea. So it just wasn't happening.
So did you not get hired then?
I didn't. And I was kind of bummed out, man. And then the New Japan thing came up because I was working it over in Universal. Like I used to work with my first company in Japan was all the legendary Mexican guys. Mm. Like I worked with like Io Del Santo, Blue Demon Jr. Dos Caras.
Dos Caras, Negro Casas.
Negro.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Now, well, I worked with Negro for Tenryu, but I worked with his brother Canelo.
Canelo, okay, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, right. We were a team a couple times. Mm-hmm. But anyways, it was a small-time company, respected, but you didn't make any money.
Right.
You know, and so...
What you made was experience.
$1,000 a week.
Yeah.
Yeah, which, I mean, people go, $1,000, but you got to pay for your food in Japan on that too, you know?
That was expensive.
And still try to bring home to pay the bills. I had a baby on the way. And,
really?
So I was just doing a New Japan thing. I thought, okay, that's where my future is going to be. And then I got a call from Sergeant Slaughter.
Really?
Yeah. And I didn't even put two and two together. I put him on hold for like 2 minutes.
Uh-huh.
And I was like talking to somebody. I'm like, yeah, Sergeant Slaughter's on the other line talking about TV tapings after WrestleMania. I'm like, who would be taping TV after WrestleMania? And then it dawned on me, WWF. And he wants to hire, like they want to give me a tryout.
Yeah.
So boom, there it was.
So you came back in and did another tryout.
I did one. I had 2 days of tryouts after WrestleMania 9.
Who'd you work then?
Louis Spicoli.
Louis, yeah.
Yeah, I got to pick him as my opponent.
Yeah, which was good.
And not against anyone else, but Louis was hungry too. And he wanted to go out there and have a good match. And like some of the guys that are full time that they might put you in to have your tryout, weren't going to make me look as good as Louis did.
Right.
You know,
people that don't understand, when you get a tryout, it really matters who you work to help you look good in the eyes. My first tryout or my tryout with WCW was with Regal, Steve Regal at the time. And it was, and he asked to work with me because he was good friends with Eddie and Chris and all, and the gang stuff. And he asked to work with me and made me look way better than I was, way better.
Yeah.
And
he's really good at that.
I mean, really, I got hired right there. Eric said, Eric Bischoff was still the boss, and said, he goes, well, the kid's got a lot of charisma. He doesn't know how to use it yet, but he's,
yeah, but your instincts were really good, man. I remember, like, even as a, like, You were so still so new, like your instincts and your, you know, everything and your timing. It was all really impressive, man.
When you're in with a guy that knows what he's doing, it helps. Ah. It's easy to follow the truth.
And well, you can relax a little bit more too.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, you're on edge because you're like, okay, I'm in with the 1-2-3 kid. I'm like, oh shit, okay. And then you get in the ring and it's you're leading the match. You're talking to me the whole time. You're like, yeah, bro, okay, kid, come back with a comeback now. Yeah. Lock this. You know, come on, fire up. So I was in good hands and I felt confident. I just, you know, when you told me to bring it.
Yeah.
You know, try. It was just trying to keep up with the big dogs there, man. And that's when you get really good, is by working with people that are much better than you, and you step up to their level, and you continually trying to do that. That's how you get good. You know, and my teachers were, I mean, really, I had probably 10 matches before I came to WCW. My teachers were Eddie, Benoit, Malenko, Finley, Regal, Arn Anderson, Kurt Hennig. Those were my teachers. So some of the best ever were the ones that I'd get in the ring with. And, you know, they'd bring it to you, but at the same time, and they all had a different style. So you would just adapt to it, you know, and you adapt or you get eaten.
The three guys that I got to work with coming in the door, like on the house show runs, I was so blessed. Mike Rotundo, Rick Martel, and Terry Taylor, and all three of them, man.
Three great ones.
Unbelievable. Three
great ones right there. Yeah.
And all I just did was just shut up and listen, man. I learned so much.
God. You know, that's something that I learned early. My Uncle Mondo would tell me, all right, kid, you need to shut up and listen. And he'd be getting mad at me. And I'm like, okay, what did I say? I said, shut up and listen. I'm like, I would just shake my head because I didn't want to talk and say, okay, shut up and listen. Okay. 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 Like, okay, just shut up. Don't even say, okay, just shut up. I say, okay. I learned fast. Like, just shut your mouth and do what they know, you know?
Yeah, man. It was incredible.
That's awesome. Yeah. So now first of all, congratulations on the Hall of Fame again. Thanks. Number two, man. That's crazy. There's a very, very small percentage of people that are actually in the Hall of Fame twice. You're up there with like Ric Flair and like, I think Booker T. God, there's such a small percentage, man. Brett, you know. So congrats on that, man, for sure. But
thanks.
When you were in WWF, right? And then you went to WCW, right? Now, did you leave WWF on your own, and did they let you go? What happened?
Make this story concise.
Yeah, your boys have got over Hall and Nash, you know, Diesel and Razor Ramon had made that big switch, and that historic switch. So
I was I should have been the first one.
Really?
Yeah. So what happened was none of us were really thinking about leaving at all. Mm-hmm. You know, there were things that we weren't happy with, but we were just try to stay there and fix it. Right. But, right. Cause if you're gone, you can't affect change. Right. If you're not there. Right.
And then it's always like anything that's great can always be changed for the better. So I get that. So you left.
Yeah, sorry, man. I've brain farted
sometimes. No, you left WWF at the
time. Yeah, but I would have if I would have. Do you remember on my show the other day I was telling you that I missed my 90-day notice window and my contract rolled over.
Right.
So I would have been, if it wasn't for that, most likely I would have been the first guy that showed up and not Scott.
Okay.
And then Scott would have showed up, and then,
okay. Right.
Yeah. But they, man, once they realized like what was up and that my contract rolled over, I was in the doghouse. Like you would not believe, man.
Oh,
really? I was miserable. Miserable. And so it was those Scott and Kevin's last tour.
Yeah.
We were in Europe. Mm-hmm. It was like 20-day tour, long ass tour. And I was miserable. I knew like I was going to have to stay and like I was being punished and I was about as miserable as a person could get.
Now, how did they punish you? Were they just making you lose to everybody?
Everyone, like obvious. Like, and then, but if you said something, you would get gaslit. Like, oh no, nothing's up. Like,
right.
You know, you would always have to read between the lines on like, if you were in trouble and why. They would never really tell you. Like,
no, you'd have to be a mind reader there for sure.
Sometimes, right?
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely. Sometimes they'd be straightforward, but oftentimes that's how it, like,
yeah,
things, but, so yeah, I was taking a lot of pills at the time and that I OD'd at TV in the production meeting.
Oh, wow.
yeah. So like I went to rehab for 28 days. Like everything was fine. Like I was fine after that for a long time, but you know, Vince brought me in, flew me to the office and you know, although I did wait outside for 3 hours before getting in to see him.
That's
he's the king at that.
That's probably typical. Yeah.
He said, look, I know like, you know, your friends are gone and two of my friends were still there, but,
Sean and Hunter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he said, look, and this was kind of his quote, like maybe not exactly word for word, but more or less he goes, If you can get a better deal down there and you want to go work for that billionaire asshole, I'll give you 7 days or I'll give you a week. Let me know in a week what you want to do. And I let him know in a week. It was really tough, man. It was really hard to leave there.
So you told him,
I gave it the week.
Wow. That's pretty, I mean, that's pretty big events to do that because usually he's like, you know, I'm sorry, you're locked in, bro. And you know, take your medicine.
Well, I was that kind of damaged goods, right? Like he didn't know. He didn't know if I was going to stay, you know, clean after my first rehab stint.
Right.
And so I get it, you know, and I was grateful to him for that.
Yeah.
Because he got,
awesome.
And while I was in, here's the thing, Chavo, while I was in rehab, I got paid better than while I was out. Like they made sure I wasn't worried about nothing, man. I got, they sent me 10 grand for a Kuwait trip. I didn't even go on. And
wow. Okay. You know, I'll take that.
And Vince was right there. He's like, man, if you need anything, call me.
Really?
And yeah.
Yeah.
And so I did, man. My wife caught me cheating on her while I was in rehab.
Wow.
Yeah. I never really talked about this anywhere.
Wow.
So like I was all upset and I called Vince and he's like, look, just do what you got to do. Yeah. Do the right thing. And that part will work out. And he was right.
Yeah. Wow. Oh my God, dude. That's,
but he was right there, man. He answered the phone.
The world coming down on you right now.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something that's needed though. I did a lot of remembering for stuff with Eddie, like sometimes it's needed, like all of that stuff's got to come crashing down for you to actually go, okay, maybe there's an issue here. Right.
Yeah. So it's funny you say that, because there was a time and it was Eddie's, on one of Eddie's birthdays, he was in a real bad place and he called me up. I was on the phone with him for a long time, man. Mm-hmm. And I was really scared, like for him.
Right.
You know, he seemed like he was right on the edge. And like later on, the last time I saw Eddie, Hunter came out here and picked me up and brought me to rehab. And him and Vince paid for it. They didn't have wellness policy yet. Mm-hmm. So Vince, like pretty much Hunter paid for the rehab out of his own pocket. Vince paid for half, but he flew out here to get me. Mm-hmm. And he brought me to, they were shooting a commercial for WrestleMania and Eddie was there and Eddie saw me and he came up and he brought me a devotional and he had a long talk with me and he was, you know, he was returning the favor, man. And I never forgot that.
That's cool, man.
Yeah.
It was like that. Eddie was like that. So then you go to WCW, I'm sorry. And then you're part of the huge first real faction, the NWO, right? And you're part of this big, huge thing and really, really instrumental in elevating WCW to where it got. You guys were hugely instrumental in that. And then, we had our matches, you're doing stuff. And then I just remember you being gone. You were there for a while. It was like 2 years, and all of a sudden you weren't there.
Yeah.
Is that?
I just, you, yeah. I was like, I broke my neck working in a house show match with Lex up in Mankato, oh, Minnesota. Oh, really? I think it was.
See, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Just a freak accident. Lex, like, cause I loved working with Lex.
Right.
And he was as safe as anyone I was ever in the ring with. It was just a freak accident. He's so strong.
Yeah. He's super strong.
Yeah. So, but I was trying to get a raise at the time, Chavo. Mm-hmm. And so like, you don't want to take yourself out of the game. Right. So I kept trying to work through it.
Right.
You know, and it was killing me. My the whole left side was starting to atrophy, and it was a lot of pain. And finally I went and got, yeah, well, I had the surgery. Yeah. And really, that's when, like, while I was off is when Eric fired me by FedEx, you know?
Oh, that, really?
Yeah.
You got, well, you got the FedEx letter, and they were like, what is this? The check or memo? Oh, yeah. I got fired.
Yeah. And I've told that story a lot, but, oh shit.
I don't know. I don't know.
There was a point fired. I was trying. Yeah. He disputes the reason, and like,
who knows?
Here's the thing. Scott and Kev were being very, very difficult, and I was at home.
Right.
And I wasn't going anywhere. I'm still recovering from my surgery. Right. So, okay. Like, let's try to put Scott and Kev in his place. Because my contract wasn't as good as theirs. I didn't have the protections against being fined or anything like that. And
right.
And so, like, he fired me. And, I made an issue.
A lesson a little bit, and kind of, like, hey, guys, if I can't fire you, I'm going to fire your friend.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing is I was really upset by it. But at the same time, I had been sitting at home watching both shows. Mm-hmm. And I saw the momentum that WWE.
Huge. Well, we were all fans. So we were all, when we first were WCW, when I first got there, we started doing really well and started kicking their butts. And they were still doing the 1980s wrestling type stuff. And we were super cutting edge and stuff. And it was great. And then all of a sudden it switched and they started doing the Attitude Era.
Yeah.
And when that started happening with, you know, with what Rock and it wasn't even DX.
With Steve.
Rock and Steve and China and Hunter, just all different stuff. We started like, oh, this is really cool. And we, being young wrestlers and fans, we started becoming fans of WWF again and watching them. And we would tune in. And I remember like Disco Inferno and Billy Kidman and everybody. And we would see, anytime we saw 316, we'd like punch each other.
know, like Punch Buggy?
Yeah, because it was like, Steve Austin. Remember they were doing that when, like, you know, Rock would get his beeper and see 316.
Oh, yeah,
and
all
of a sudden, that stuff, you know. So we would just kind of, because we're fans of it too, you know. So funny, because, you know, we're still young in the business. We're still like, you know, just a bunch of marks in the business. And we'd see that. But then, you saw that momentum starting, at least the competition. They were both on the same playing field. When before it was WWF above us, then we started coming above them, WCW, and then that playing field. And that's when wrestling was the best, I think. With
it was
that,
man,
that competition, man, back and forth, and what are we gonna do? What
it was exciting.
Yeah. So then you left NWO, and then how did you become member of DX?
Hey, so word got out,
one of the other biggest factions in all of wrestling, you're part of both.
Yeah. That's pretty fortunate.
That's pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing. So,
you know, I always kept, we like Scott and Kev and I and Paul and Sean, we always stay in contact anyways,
right,
you know?
Right, right. Yeah, well, sure, because boys, yeah.
I mean, we didn't talk as much as we normally would if we were all working together, but we were tight.
Yeah.
And as soon as they found out, Paul hit me up and he's like, look, man, like the timing is perfect. He goes, Sean's got to quit wrestling. Like, and we want to keep the DX thing going. And it was perfect, man, because I went down there and I got that NWO credibility. And I brought that with to DX.
Right.
And like, it would have been really difficult. for them to keep that momentum, like if that didn't happen. I mean, I'm not saying it wouldn't have been successful without me in it, but like that NWO feel adding to it, man.
I totally remember that. And I remember you showing up there and we were going like, oh shit. Like, well, you caught you up with that cool ass pyro and you do, you know, the X thing and the firing of the pyro side. Like that was really cool. We were like, gosh.
Yeah. They know how to make you look like a star, don't they?
Huge. And that's one thing I think that was a big difference between WCW and WWF at the time. WWF, if they wanted to put that rocket on you, they really knew how to do it.
Yeah. And they did, man. When I first got back, they pushed me, like they just kind of gave me the ball, let me run with it. Like, at one point I was having title matches with The Rock European, like the UK pay-per-view, Capital Carnage, I think. Like,
yeah.
Like I was like one of the headline matches.
You guys were having incredible matches. I'm sure you're going down and tearing the house down. I'm sure Dwayne was loving working with you and you just like,
we loved working with each other.
He can do anything. Yeah. Let's do it. You know?
Yeah. Even regardless of whether he was the heel or the baby face, like we had really good chemistry together.
Yeah. Oh dude, you had good chemistry with everybody, but we know the chemistry, the actual great chemistry we had with certain people. Yeah, for sure. Now let's go to Norfolk, Virginia, because we're in at the arena, we're at the Scope and we're wrestling, and all of a sudden we get this buzz, this word that DX is outside. What were your thoughts? Because our thoughts were like this: we don't know if we should go out and fight them or we should go get their autographs.
I'm happy you guys didn't come out and fight, because we loved
like
y'all.
Like, we were like we wanted, like, oh man, they came, that's frick, how come we didn't think of that? That's amazing. Like, they came out in a tank and you guys were like everybody. It was awesome. Well, what do you guys think? What were you guys thinking?
We just showed up to TV and there was a tank. Well, it wasn't a tank. It was a Jeep. We, you know, when the story's told now, it was a tank.
Yeah.
It was a freaking Panzer tank or some shit. But
right.
But it was a Jeep, an army Jeep with a howitzer cannon on the back of it.
Right.
And, we showed up and I was like, what are we going to do with that? Go, like, I think Road Dog made a comment, just kidding. And Hunter knew already.
Right. Oh, really?
You know? And so they let us know. And they didn't tell us this, what we were doing. They asked us if we would be willing to do it, because, like, let's be honest, man, we don't know what the hell is going to happen.
Yeah.
And that's like, that could be major heat.
You don't know if if WCW is going to send out Ming and Barb to go, you know, you guys are,
and maybe you just burned a bridge and you have nowhere to go if you get fired.
Right. And I remember Eric saying he should have just let you guys in.
Yeah. I don't know what the hell.
They should just let you guys in and put you guys on our TV. Why? I mean, think about why wouldn't they? I mean, keep it going. Who knows? You have a face off in the ring and everybody just don't touch each other or whatever.
Like, I wanted to get in the building, Chavo, but like through the front.
Sure.
And, or like what my thing was, is let's instead of doing everything first and then trying to get in the building, let's try to get in the building first so they don't know we're coming.
Right.
You know, but no, we did it the other way. And I honestly, I don't know if management really truly wanted us in the building. Because that's like, you know, right deep in the dragon's lair.
That's
going to
happen. But I mean, that guy, if you think, the ratings, the WCW ratings would have went through the freaking roof.
Yeah.
And then and vice versa, you guys played right off of that. I mean, just what could have been, you know? So that's we still talk about that.
Hey, so we had the tank, right, with the cannon. So we fired the first shot, right? Or whatever it was.
Yeah.
But everyone's waiting for the big explosion and it goes like this. Pink. It was just like this little popcorn fart.
No one remembers that, though.
Yeah, but they added to post-production. They made it seem like it was still a big old freaking cannon shot. It was so funny. Oh, my God.
Wow. Wow. So then that's how you.
And then we went down and then we did. And then Chavo, we went down and invaded the office, like down in Georgia.
That's right.
And we went to CNN Tower.
Yeah, CNN Tower. You guys went there. That's right.
And we did this one thing where we shot CNN Tower with the cannon and it exploded. Could you imagine if we did that shit now?
Oh, yeah, you can't with the terrorists.
It wouldn't even happen.
That's before 9/11. That's before all that stuff, you know.
And then we went in to CNN, and security comes, and we're about to get kicked out. And then this one guy, he's like one of the big VPs of all of Turner Broadcasting. His name was Dick Cheatham. He comes out and he goes, DX, I love you guys. Give these guys all access passes. So we had all access passes to CNN Tower.
No,
it was amazing.
I forgot about that. That's right. You're walking all around CNN. Wow.
Yeah.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Dude, can you imagine that now with like, I mean, it's like not the A&E is on the same level as WWE, but just that, you know, I guess some people have done that. Like the Bullet Club did something like that with trying
that
to.
That was smart on their part.
Yeah, man. It was Cody and those guys. Yeah.
Yeah. Very they didn't have another TV show to air that on.
Right.
But like, it still got a lot of buzz.
Absolutely.
You know, and WWE kind of no-sold it, but like, I know they weren't happy.
Yeah. But, and you know, that's WWE smart in that, you know, they're very smart on not acknowledging any other wrestling besides them, which has worked for them very much in the past, you know. But now, right now, it's kind of weird with the wrestling landscape, how you have a lot of people crossing over, you know, have guys from like Omega and going over to TNA, and you got the Good Brothers, you know, jumping over there to A&E and going back and forth. It's kind of cool to see that again. I don't know if you watch any of it, but it's pretty.
I don't see the whole shows, Chavo. Hey, man, I'm sorry. Sometimes I cut you off before you're finished talking. Sorry about that.
No, don't. This is an interview about you, not about me. So go ahead, bro. But you see that, right? Like, if you've been watching a little bit of that, it's kind of cool, little crossover, kind of like when we were younger, you know?
Yeah. And it is cool. And it's like, it's exciting.
Yeah.
I worry about like brand confusion, though, if it gets to be too much. That's the only thing, man.
Yeah, but remember when we were younger, you're a fan of Japanese wrestling, and so was I. I used to get the tapes when my dad would wrestle over there a lot. The referees would give him the VHS tapes, and I'd come home and watch those. And that's when I first started seeing the Road Warriors and started seeing, you know, Choshu and all these different, you know, wrestlers going, wow, this is wrestling. And I would see sometimes on those tapes, you'd have, you know, NWA champion who was Ric Flair wrestling the AWA champion like Rick Martel against each other. Wow, it was pretty cool. And even back then, you would have, you know, Ric Flair NWA champion wrestle Bob Backlund, the WWF
sometimes
champion.
Yeah, you know, Harley and Bob had like title versus title, and
they'd always go to
Harley
Raw,
and Bob Backlund. I'm at like,
right. I mean, that's pretty amazing. I mean, to go back there and see that's. Yeah. That's pretty awesome, man.
I was talking to Nate because I had Nate is the first guest on my first episode of my show.
Mine was Taker, so yeah.
He gave me an hour and 30 minutes of his time, which I was incredibly grateful for.
Bro,
but
he's the best.
I saw footage recently of a match that Nate had with Nick Bockwinkel up in Winnipeg, which was a very, like, I didn't even know it ever happened. It was like a title versus title match.
Nick could go.
It was great.
Man.
He was amazing.
We all know that Nate should go, but Nick could go, right?
Yeah.
Just that nostalgia to see those big companies go back and forth, and to see how like you would never see whoever the champ, who's the champ right now? Is it Roman or is it
who is the Bobby champion? Lashley is one.
Oh, Bobby. Okay. Bobby.
And maybe
Bobby.
Drew McIntyre might be another one.
I think they're going against one of the championships. But that's pretty good. I mean, to have Bobby and Drew, I know those guys both really, really well. And they're both, you know, kind of, we had a hand a little bit in helping them get better. Those guys are both great guys. It's such good for the business. I love them both.
Man, when Drew came back after his hiatus and he came back with the new look and reinventing himself, I knew it was a matter of time before he was main eventing, because that's right up Vince's alley, man.
Well, so when I started seeing him on some indie stuff, and God, he was just had a fire burning in him. He wanted to come back strong, you know. And he and I are really, really close. He's one of the group, one of my boys. And if I have a clip, he's in the click, you know. And he was just, man, had this fire burn him. He's such a big guy. He's like, you know, 6 foot, you know, six, and he's got a great body.
Good looking dude.
He can work his ass off, and he's a tough guy. He's actually tough. And he, you know, he cut a promo. The guy was, I was like, man, you're there, man. Just keep going. Keep going. Yeah. And he's like, oh, thank you, Chavo. Thank you.
such a wonderful guy too. It's like you can't help but be just incredibly happy for him.
Yeah, man. It's good to see just his work ethic. He comes in and just busts his ass, man. And he just has great matches. And we used to have really good matches, and he was young and green, and we were, you know, calling it all in the ring. And that was really cool to see that he's able to do that.
But he had to go, Chavo. It wouldn't happen if he didn't go back out there.
That's, sometimes you do have to switch, and you get stale somewhere, and you got to go somewhere else and kind of reinvent yourself. And like, whether you make it back to WWE or nothing, it doesn't really matter, but you make yourself better.
Like we were talking on my show the other day, you and I, and I was talking about creative satisfaction. Mm-hmm. Like, so that was totally missing for him. Right. Like, and like, whether it's the blame or they just didn't have nothing for him, or like he got complacent and kind of, you know, it kind of, they feed into each other, right?
They really do.
Yeah. And they really and do. Yeah. So like, it's easy to just get real apathetic, right? Like, and just not care anymore and just collect your check.
You do. You can, you know, well, because if in a sense you're thinking, if they don't care, well, why should I care? And it's definitely the wrong mentality. But, you know, we're always, as talent, we're always pushing and we're pushing and pushing, trying to, you know, better ourselves and move up that ladder or grab that brass ring if you want. And we both know sometimes they'll let you grab it, and sometimes they'll just pop it up and you can't grab it, you know? So it gets frustrating.
It's funny. Like we're talking about the brass ring. Yeah. There was one guy that Vince tried to give the brass ring to like a half a dozen times, and he just kept going, no thanks, Road Dogg.
He's like,
he kept failing drug tests, and Vince was still trying to give it to him. He just did it. Well, he wasn't ready for it.
He's so good on that mic. I mean, all those Armstrong boys were such good workers. Yeah. So great. I mean, Brad was so amazing. Scotty and Stevie, but Brian, man, Road Dogg, God, you give him the mic, he's just so gold.
And he might not have had the technical like wrestling stuff down, but his instincts and timing in there were second to none, man.
Well, but he was different. Like every one of like, just like everyone, the Guerreros are different. Every one of the Armstrongs were different.
Yeah.
Brad had more of that technical wrestling background, where you have Road Dogg, and he's like, he's such a performer. Not that he can't do the technical stuff, but he's such a performer in the ring. He's like, he just breeds like just charisma, you know?
Yeah, man.
Right. And then you remember Brad outside of the ring was so charismatic. And then in the ring, he was just all business and strong. And
it was like, man, hey, can't you bring that out there? Like,
can't you get that in?
It's just really tough sometimes, man.
Yeah. It's very, you can or you can't. And, you know, Brad grew up in that other day in the younger, times. So where it was wrestling, it wasn't about, you know, promos and personality. You get in there, you do your wrestling. So that's probably how he was taught. And then Road Dogg was a little bit different, but God, he just, somebody who oozed charisma, man, was Brian.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know?
Yeah. That's funny, man. Back to our big WCW match that, or in my mind, our big one that we had on Nitro.
It was a really good match, man.
It was a good match, man. And do you remember, so you and I were in the dressing room talking about it, kind of like, just kind of like throwing some ideas around. And I remember Scott was there. So Scott's going, well, hey, I'm going to, you know, yo, Chavo, the way he talks, you know, how about I'm going to come in and do some stuff too. And can you imagine in WWE that somebody just interjected themselves in a match?
Yeah.
You'd be fired.
Yeah.
Right? But he just went ahead and goes, I'm going to jump in and do some stuff. And we're like, oh, okay, really? Okay, great. Yeah. You know,
thanks for those that don't know the match, like, and haven't seen it. I was doing it. I was just starting an angle with Eddie.
Yes.
And I'm having a match with you and you're kicking my ass. Right. I get some heat on you and you make a heck of a comeback. I bail to the floor. In comes Scott. They knew it was only a matter of time that he was going to interfere. They just didn't know when.
Right.
And he slides in and he hits you with his finish. And that's when I come in and like put you in the buzz killer, like the chicken wing crossface, but you already dead. You weren't getting up.
But I think Scott sold for me too. I think he did something on the bottom
earlier on,
blasted him or something. Yeah. He went down and then you turned around on me. But maybe that's when you started the heat or whatever. But that was if you're gonna lose,
that's how you do it.
you protected both people right there.
Yeah.
Two guys got protected. You got protected. Scott looked great. He looked like, you know, like an asshole. You look like, you know, you needed him to beat me, which is exactly what you wanted. And I look like, Chavo would have beat him if it wasn't for the outside interference.
And then we beat each up, and like Eddie was just sitting there watching.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. That's pretty. I got to go back and see that match again. That's awesome. So then this flashback.
You know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of, do you remember the match that Eddie had with Terry Funk on TV? Eddie was just there one time.
That's right. That's right. About a minute as a kid. Like.
And Terry, like, Terry flew around the ring. Like, he dove out onto Terry on the floor. It was, yeah, man.
Yeah. I remember that was in
at center stage.
Was it still WCW? I mean, was it?
I think NWA. Yeah, they were calling themselves that.
Yeah. So then let's flash forward. So you and I worked another match. I don't know if you remember you came back again to WWF, WWE, I guess at the time, or you weren't doing anything or something.
I was out hurt, I imagine.
Yeah. So then you came back, and then me and you worked something like a pre-show thing, like a Velocity or one of those things. And you
Sunday
and
Night Heat or something?
Something like that. And actually had a pretty good one. We had another pretty good one. But then after that, like you, I think that you're gone again, right?
Yeah. Well, that's when I was out hurt. I had this match with Jericho, cage match.
Yeah.
And I don't know if this had anything to do with why I got hurt, but I was out all night the night before, like doing ecstasy, like before a pay-per-view.
Yeah.
Cage match.
Yeah. Probably not the best choice. Yeah, sure. But yeah.
I was like, what the hell was I doing?
Right.
And no one even had to twist my arm. I don't know what was going through my head because I wasn't really a screw up at that point.
Yeah.
But I say that, and then I tell you, that's what I did. But anyways, so I had this great idea that Chris power bombs me off the top of the cage.
Oh
yeah. And so even if I land perfect, man, it was too much for me. Yeah. And my neck was messed up pretty bad.
That's too big. So I remember you were hurt. And then you were gone for a while. So I guess you left again, or I don't know. What
I just
happened.
Was sitting at home.
Yeah.
I was at home.
Then you were like, I don't know for what happened, but I was wondering, how did you get back into like good graces with WWE? I know
it wasn't a question of getting back in good graces. Mm-hmm. Like with the office, I was doing just fine. Cause I got along with JR really well. And
sure.
And all that, but like it was creative.
Mm-hmm.
Creative like wasn't a fan of mine, and I used to complain and blame them, and like like even Brian Gewirtz, like him and I used to like but not like each other at all.
Sure.
And like I apologized to him not that like a couple of years ago.
If
I'm like,
not
man,
writing for you, bro, then you get to where you're not a fan of them, you know, because that's just the way it is.
Yeah, but it got bad.
Yeah, really.
It got a little personal. Like like we took Brian to Wrestler's Court and all that. Like that was pretty heavy. Yeah. And so like looking back on, I don't blame him one bit for not wanting to write anything decent for me, you know?
Right.
But so, yeah, I could be kind of an asshole sometimes to create. People look at me as like, oh, he's a good guy. But like there were times when, you know,
I wasn't with creative too. If they write something for you, it doesn't mean that it's going to happen. They may be writing for you and Vince may say, oh, I don't want to do that. I don't want to go that angle.
So,
or there's a different levels they still have to go through.
So I was just sitting at home. Right. And then, and they bring the NWO back or not back. They bring out, they do the NWO thing.
That's right.
Scott, Kev and Hulk.
Right.
And, then, you know, Hulk has there was a lot of creative didn't want me in NWO, even though it made total sense.
Sure. Well, yeah, absolutely.
I'm the Wolfpack. Yeah. But, Hulk did me a solid on that, man. Like, they knew that he had to turn babyface. So I was the one that like helped NWO turn on him. I came out and I cracked him in the head with the chair. He got color. Mm. He did that for me, man.
That was
a hell of a thing to do. Cause the last time, I was going to say the last time anyone knew, like I was talking shit about him, on in my return promo. And that, but like, I would see Hulk down in Tampa. Like we ran into, we were all at a concert together, and I actually set up for Hulk and Vince to have their first conversation back.
Really?
And then like all that happened. Yeah.
So then you were saying that you set up something, the first,
yeah, I facilitated them talking again, you know, after Hulk left.
Hulk and Vince?
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny because they've been on the good and on bad so many different times. Like I just talked to Hulk recently. We're talking about another project doing together. And he's like, well, you know, the old man's mad at me again. I'm like, okay, what'd you do this time? You know? So how did that meeting go that you set for them?
I don't know. Like, I think it went well. It got them talking again, you know?
And that's when Hulk came back.
Yeah.
And he had that iconic match, the WrestleMania
match with Rock. Dude, yeah, then a couple days later is when I came, like on the SmackDown tapings, is when I cracked him in the head.
Yeah,
with the chair.
When you see that match, bro, that match with at WrestleMania with Rock and Hulk, and everybody doesn't know that match, they were, Hulk Hogan was supposed to be the bad guy, and Rocky, you know, the Rock was supposed to be the good guy.
Yeah,
and it changed in the ring, and it changed. The fans called for Rocky to be the bad guy, and at WrestleMania, and dude, it was so
and
iconic.
They adjusted.
They totally adjusted and did in there. It was just magic. Like two pros doing it was so great. And if you still see the match, I don't know if you can feel like I was in the arena and you're like, God, just the electricity was so amazing.
Oh yeah, I was there. Yep, it was right? It was magic. Yeah, that moment was the very peak of the Monday Night Wars Attitude Era. Like it was maybe slowly started going down, but like to me, that was it.
Well, that was, you know, that was the icon versus the people's chant, man. It was, that was pretty cool.
Yeah. So I got like back into the main event situation because of that. And
really?
So the whole rest of the time I worked there, I was doing main events, you know?
Right. Oh, that's awesome. It should be.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, totally.
So I was very grateful to Hulkster for that.
Dude, that's awesome, man. You know, like you said before, like me and you, we could probably talk all day long doing this stuff, you know, definitely could. And I know just because you and I, we grew up being fans of the business and, you know, really being students of the game and stuff and watching growing up in a different era and then coming up in a different era, you know. So that's why I think our wrestling styles have a lot of that throwback in them.
Sure.
You know for sure.
Yeah.
But at the very end of Suplex and Cervezas, we always do a rapid fire questions. And I got like 10 questions. And,
okay.
There's no right or wrong answer. Just see what you think. You up for it?
Yeah, of course.
All right. So are you a vintage car guy or a new car guy?
Ooh. If I had to take a guess, if I had to pick one, I'm going to go vintage.
I'm the same, dude. I mean,
I love new cars and everything, but man, it's just something about like, man, around here, sometimes they have parades of people with their classic cars, man.
There's nothing like it, right? There's nothing like it. Totally. Totally. We grew up in, you know, a different era. Were you an NWA guy or a WWF guy?
NWA all day long.
I was too.
Yeah, I was from Florida, you know, St. Pete, Florida.
Yeah, I see Ric Flair and all those guys. And
the thing is once I started seeing other stuff, like once that started coming into the market, I was I was fascinated. I love seeing wrestling from other places. Even if it wasn't any good, it was just cool to see other wrestling.
Yeah, because you didn't really know that it even existed. There was no internet back then.
Yeah.
You'd see wrestling magazines or something, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Were you because you weren't always in WWF, were you a Hulk Hogan or a Ric Flair fan?
Ric Flair.
That was the same, man. And only because, and nothing towards any of them, but, you know, Rick was the working wrestling champion.
Yeah.
And being in California, the show that I really got was like the Superstar show, which was just squash matches. So I'm like, well, this isn't wrestling to me. I'd see NWA or wrestling from Japan. I'm like, wow, this is amazing, right? Okay. So at the same time, were you a Steamboat or Savage fan? Now that you've worked with them all both and know them both.
Wow, man, that's a tough question.
Right.
I'm going to go with Savage, and it's just because of the whole package, the tote bag, the persona, and just
sure.
everything about it, man. Like,
sure.
I just gravitate towards that over the white meat babyface, but
yeah.
Steve-O is,
it's amazing.
You know, up yeah. there with anybody as far as all time greats.
One of the best.
I never, like,
one, yeah.
I would go up into the weeds talking about it, but
go ahead. This is how you go.
Well, what? I just, even when like the crowd with him and Flair in certain situations
yeah.
was for Rick.
Yeah.
They were pro Ric Flair. Like mm-hmm. Steamboat would win him over like halfway through the match, just with the hard work and the selling.
Yeah. He was the ultimate babyface. Yeah. Man. You felt for the guy. You like, he had some, that magic to where yeah. you just wanted him to overcome. He was such a good guy, you know. I agree with you.
Yeah.
Being on the road, were you a Waffle House or a Cracker Barrel guy?
Waffle House.
Waffle
it was
House,
just way more Waffle Houses on the side of the yeah. highway.
No, true. And they were open late.
Yeah.
They were open late. We could get, you know, 2 a.m. to get
yeah.
a
one right next to the dungeon.
That's right.
Did you ever stay at the dungeon?
That's right. I did. Absolutely. I was there a whole bunch of times when I used to come to. So anybody know the Dungeon? Dungeon is this old Ramada hotel that is right there next to the Atlanta airport. And we used to call it the Dungeon because it was kind of very dungeon-esque style. But I used to stay there. But when I moved to Atlanta, I had to move there for a year. I stayed there for a whole week looking for a apartment.
Where'd you move? Peachtree City?
No, I moved to Marietta. I just got an apartment, you know, so I just started in WCW. Right on. Yeah, but you know that Delaine is still there.
I saw her.
Somebody just told me, oh, Delaine's still there. I think Penzer told me.
I saw her like several years after all that. Uh-huh. Like, it, weirdly enough, the rehab that yeah. Paul brought me to when uh-huh. I told you the story about him coming out to pick me up was mm-hmm. in Atlanta. And mm-hmm. it was like a mile down the road from the dungeon.
Oh, wow.
So I got out of rehab yeah. one time and went and saw Delaine.
Yeah, Delaine was the manager at the Ramada. They should take yeah. care of all the wrestlers all the time and just make sure that we were taken care of, and just really cool lady. We just, yeah, really took care of all of us.
Yeah, people felt like that was home.
Yeah, well, yeah. we didn't have a home, you know, because your home was another place and you were rarely there. So yeah. we were in hotel rooms more than we were at home, you know. Being a wrestler, do you prefer being a heel or a babyface?
Like earlier in my career, I preferred being a heel.
Mm-hmm.
But like later on, I just enjoyed being a baby face.
Did you?
I'll be honest with you, man. After a while, I'm kind of an empathetic dude. Mm-hmm. Like I'm kind of an empath. And like, so like when energy comes at me, yeah. like a lot of, whether like it's a work or not, it's sure. still negative energy.
Yeah.
And sometimes it just gets to be a lot, man.
No, I hear you.
It could take its toll on you.
Yeah,
everyone telling you suck and yelling shit at you.
I loved it. I love that. Just if I had the whole place chanting Chavo sucks, Chavo, that just was so good. I love that.
Don't get me wrong. Like it was what like it was like when I strived to like I wanted that to happen, but then be careful what you wish for, man. It got to be a lot for me, and it affected me negatively.
No, I totally see that. I remember one time I was in. Italy, and we had just gone back to Italy. WWF or WWE went back to Italy for the first time in a long time.
Yeah.
And they were just so happy. It was so hot. And I walked out and I had a feud with Ray or something. It was pretty good little feud. So they were all chanting, you know, like just chanting just against Chavo. And I swear that I have so much energy. I wanted to fight every like 10,000 Italians. I was like just praying for somebody to just jump the board, just jump the barricade in your mind. Come on. It was like so much that I almost blew up in the ring. I had to calm myself down going, okay, relax. We still got to wrestle, you know, but I love that. It was awesome.
That can really get set, like knock you off your game, like going into a match when, was it before a match? The match?
Oh yeah totally. And there was times I remember going in and I'd be so amped up and I would feel my legs get weak and I'm like, okay, whoa, hold on. You still got to, you got 15 minutes to go still. Just relax, you know, and take your coffee break in the ring, you know. All right. So were you a martial arts guy? Were you a Bruce Lee or Gene LaBelle fan?
Well, as a kid, I was a Bruce Lee fan because I didn't really I didn't know grappling, like,
right,
yet. And mm-hmm. you know, even though, like, if you look at Bruce, like, his book The Tao of Jeet Kune Do, there's all kinds of great stuff about grappling that he learned from Gene.
From Gene, yeah,
he learned
from Gene, exactly. MMA or boxing?
Oof. Man, I would have said MMA, mm-hmm. but like, if boxing, like when boxing's hot, man, there's nothing like boxing.
Mike Tyson run,
you know?
Yeah, like, you know, Sugar Ray Leonard, Hagler, all that.
Yeah, Hagler, man, like, rest in peace. He was the man when I was a kid.
Did you like Hagler? Did you like Hearns? Remember that? Remember that fight?
Yes. Yeah. Amazing. Best round ever in the history of boxing. Yeah. But I was a Hagler fan.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
That's awesome. You're back in shape. You're looking pretty good. Are you a CrossFit or weights guy?
Weights.
Weights. Nice.
Yeah. I'm not saying I wouldn't be a CrossFit guy. I just have never tried it.
Sure. 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 A couple more here. Do you like the blondes or the brunettes?
Wow. It just depends. like, I don't have a particular type.
No?
Like, if you look at, like, if you look at, like, different women I've been with, like, they go, like, like, now my wife is black.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So, like, that's totally different. Like, obviously totally different than.
Right, right.
Than, you know, obviously.
Yeah, the before, yeah.
Sure, yeah.
Great. You were a member of both factions, man. So, I got to ask you, which one do you prefer? If you can even answer, were you an NWO or a DX fan?
It's tough because I'm getting ready to, like, I don't know when you're going to air this, but I haven't done the Hall of Fame thing yet. I'm getting ready to go in with NWO.
Yeah.
And it was great. NWO was amazing. And it wouldn't have been like, anyways.
Yeah. I hear you.
I made more money and I had more freedom. Like, I was more in control of things. And I felt like just like I was riding as high as I've ever ridden. Like, you know, does that make any sense? Like during DX.
DX.
Yeah.
If it may have just stayed like you three in NWO or four with Hulk, but it got so watered down with like 25 different people in it, you know? And DX never did that. DX was you three, China, and then Road Dog Billy Gunn, really.
They tried to put Val Venus with us, but it just like, we were totally against it. And there was nothing against Val.
Yeah.
Like when you start doing that, like,
waters down.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just worked. That's one thing with DX. You guys always, it just stayed true to DX.
Really, yeah, we had great chemistry, all of us together. Like,
yeah,
you know, in there.
I agree.
It was
a blast, man. They're fun. So that's it, man. So thanks a lot. Where can they find you? What do you got going on right now?
So my new project will debut on April 1st. It's Pro Wrestling for Life. And we have a weekly podcast.
Right.
There's a Patreon. We're doing a Patreon page that's going to have a lot of really cool content.
Yeah.
And like, awesome. I'm going to be more accessible to the people. Like, you know, we can interact, you know, more and that anyway. So it's like Pro Wrest for Life, PROWRES for life.
Pro Wrest.
That's the Twitter handle. And that, so my first guest is Ric Flair on April 1st.
One of my favorite persons in the world. I love that guy.
Yeah. You're like the second or third.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. That's cool. That's good. I'm happy with that. Thanks, man. So you guys, listen again, check out Sean's Xbox, his Pro Wrestling for Life podcast. And the first episode of this little podcast here is over there. So we kind of piggyback on each other. So definitely check that out. Bro, it's such a pleasure talking with you all always, man. And a wrestling historian or a guy who's been there, a guy who's been everywhere, and a guy I definitely respect, man. So thanks again for jumping on with me.
Chavo, I really had a great time. Like, that's why I love doing these. Just because of the conversation we just had that might not have ever happened otherwise, you know?
Yeah.
And we get to share it with everyone.
I really love. Now I've interviewed other people like, you know, an Andrew Yang and, you know, like a Gabriel Iglesias and stuff. And it's great.
Yeah.
I really love podcasting with my friends, the boys, because it's like we have such a bond because no one has lived this life except for us. Yeah. And you can tell people about it all they want. You can read, they can read about it, they can write about it, but they just don't know unless they went through the politics and the bumps and the bruises and the missing home and, you know, the heartbreaks and living in a hotel room. They don't know. So that's why I'm always just the bond that I got with the boys is something that I hold really true and dear to my heart. So thank you, brother, for coming on.
Thank you,
man.
I hope we get to see each other sometime soon, man.
I hope so. I hope so. I'll be in Tampa doing an appearance over there for something, and I'll be in there for Josh Barnett's Bloodsport doing a little work shoot over there, and maybe we'll bump into each other. Good luck at the Hall of Fame, man. I'm glad you're going in again, and
thanks, man.
Get them both rings on. That'd be awesome. Yeah. All right, brother.
Take care, Chavo. Have a great day, my friend.
Be safe, brother. Thank you, brother.